Hi, this is Liz. I'm at SlowGenLiz on Twitter, and you're listening to A Dark Companion.
Hi, this is Zero, and you're listening to A Dark Companion, a Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts podcast. This is episode 7. We're looking at chapter 12, The Girl in the Coffin. I have a guest with me. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Liz.
How are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
Good. Excellent. So we've both been watching and rewatching chapter 12 in preparation for this. Pulling up the Tumblr for this podcast and my take on Haunting Melissa is itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. And the first thing I'd like to talk about is the chapter header, the portal icon for this chapter. So in the center, we've got Melissa in the foreground, and in the background, looks like we have Goth Girl back there. And around the outside of the portal, we've got a couple of crosses at the top, and in the bottom left corner, you can see a little oval-shaped painting or carving, and we see that in Melissa's mother's room, that locked room. Looks like Virgin Mary and the baby Jesus. And on the right side is something that I've yet to figure out, and I haven't heard anyone that has figured it out. Do you have that pulled up by any chance, Liz?
No, I do, and I'm looking at it, and someone on the discussion board said that it was a lampshade.
Lampshade. That's interesting.
Which I can kind of see.
Yeah.
But I couldn't figure it out either.
Yeah, at one point someone pointed to the railings, and there's a few pictures on the Instagram of Neil Edelstein and Haunting Melissa that kind of shows like a big, I don't know, foyer of like a mansion with staircase going down each side, and they thought it was the railings of the staircase, but the lines are a little too close to each other.
Yeah.
The lampshade actually sounds pretty good, but I'm going to have to go through and look for a lampshade.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, after I finished watching, I was just reading the discussion boards, and then I went back and looked at the portal, but I didn't get a chance to watch it again.
Ah, yeah. Well, definitely going to do that after this, if there's anything to that. Let's see. So, characters that we have in this chapter, Melissa, we have Goth Girl, we've got the Visitor, or Fedora the Explorer, Jack Strogue, Dr. Caraway, or Mrs. Caraway, I guess because nobody actually calls her Dr. Caraway, and the Girl in the Coffin, which we need to figure out who that is, and the priest or the reverend are all kind of fairly prominently featured in this episode. So let's talk about how it starts. We've got a shot in the dark of the Strogue house, and this chapter starts with a DSE. Did you notice?
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's foggy.
Yeah, the mist goes by. Sometimes it's not. That's kind of right up front. I didn't catch it the first couple of times.
No, I didn't either.
Because it's not such a big thing, like somebody in a room, somebody not in a room. It's just a mist going by.
Right.
And Melissa is jumping into bed, turns the lights off, which I don't know how she can have the lights off or sleep in that house ever. But...
yeah, no, I think I probably would have moved.
Yeah, I'd stay at a friend's house, call up Holly, just get away. I wouldn't go to Holly's because Carter was a little messed up.
Very creepy, very creepy.
Yeah. And She's kind of fitfully rolling around in bed and gets a wake-up call from our good friend Goth Girl with her creepy long fingers.
Terrifying, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Nobody ever wants to wake up that way. And I thought that might be a DSC, but you watch it again and it's always there. It seems like the kind of thing that would be.
Yeah, I always expect it to be, and it's not. It's weird.
And I'm very curious the decision process that goes into what they decide is going to be dynamic and what they decide is just how it's going to be.
Yeah, because the things that are dynamic are important.
Right. And the things that aren't are important. Everything's important.
Everything's important. That's true.
Yeah. I mean, this has definitely changed the way I watch every movie. Where I'll go and rewind stuff and try to look closer because I suspect everything.
Because everything is a decision that was made, so everything is important.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. All right. And the other, well, and you can hear my chair creaking probably, this house is full of really creaky doors.
Oh, yeah, and floors.
Yes. Which Neil said, I think it was on Twitter, or maybe it was on the discussion boards, that these are the actual sounds that the doors and floor make. They didn't add anything.
That is really creepy.
Yeah, and they had to work there for probably months on end.
I mean, if it's full of people, if the house is full of people, it's nice to have those noises. You know where everyone is. You know what's going on. When you're by yourself.
Yeah. You don't want that. I don't even know if I'd like it. If it was full of people, I would just constantly be hearing it. I don't know.
Now, you don't hear it, though. I've lived in houses with creaky floors.
You kind of
and you don't really hear it. Yeah, you do. You absolutely get used to it.
Mm.
But at night, especially when you're by yourself, it's not. You hear everything, and it's all terrifying.
Jeez. Ooh, thank you.
It's like this whole episode, this whole chapter is just like, what are things that terrified you when you were a kid?
Right.
Let's throw them in.
Yeah. I think they hit all of them. Let's see. So we've got, Melissa gets up after being scared out of her mind and goes out and decides to go into her mother's room. Anything interesting there you noticed?
She shuts the door really... There's a DSC there, right?
Yes, there is.
And it's... She shuts the door really slowly, which just makes it even creepier.
Yeah.
And then sometimes someone's sitting on the bed behind her.
Right. We kind of get... it's similar to the portal icon for... the chapter, although that looks like it's more in Melissa's room, but same kind of a shot where in the background we've got Goth Girl sitting on the bed sometimes.
Yeah.
And so that directly correlates to the mist in the beginning. When there is mist, there's no Goth Girl on the bed. When there isn't, then she's on the bed.
Well, we've seen that mist before.
Yeah. So clearly it's not just mist. I don't know. I would be suspicious of everything. And then we've got Jack on the phone in the kitchen.
Yes, and who is he talking to?
Well, I would suspect, I can never really be sure. One, because everybody in town seems to be in on whatever's going on.
Yeah.
But I mean, it certainly could be... one thing I noticed about that conversation is, as you listen to it, eventually it's pretty clear he's talking about Melissa, but you can imagine a similar conversation like this about Catherine in the past.
Oh, absolutely.
So it kind of makes you think, like, you know, this is he's going through this whole thing again. You know, he really, really seems tired of going through this and doesn't want to go through the same things.
Yeah, he says, I don't intend to go through that again.
Yeah. What a mess. So it's hard times for Jack. I mean, looks like he's not dealing with it very well. But he also knows more than he lets on, so I don't know. I don't know what he's up to. back up.
You're so suspicious of him. You hate him so much.
I don't hate him. I just, because he has information, I have to pay close attention to everything he does.
Right.
You know, I don't know anything. I don't know nearly as much as he does. So he's going to make decisions based on what he actually knows.
I'm actually kind of impressed with him. I mean, it sucks that he has this information that he's not sharing and he's basically letting his daughter lose her mind.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's not being harassed by whatever's doing this.
That's true. So he's putting up with his own demons, so to speak, but doesn't... How come he doesn't seem to be losing his mind to the level of Amanda Maynard, Catherine, and Melissa?
Well, everybody deals with stuff differently, but also, you know, he knows what's going on.
Right.
So Melissa has no idea what's happening.
Sure.
And she's just come back from wherever the hell she was for a month and has no idea where she was. So, yeah. I mean, that's why she's losing her shit. I don't know why everybody else is, because they all know what's going on, too.
Right, because the only people that we've heard about that legitimately just went nuts was Amanda and Catherine. Now, what? And then Melissa's starting to go that route, so... What's the correlation? Is it something to do with being a woman? Is it something to do with the relationship that Catherine had with her sister and Amanda had with her sister? And is, you know, what's the tie in there? Why is it necessary for them to go crazy?
That's a really good question.
It certainly seems like there's some kind of connection there.
There does.
All right, so... Where are we at now? Not Catherine. Oops. Well, might as well be. Melissa is sitting in that chair in her mother's room.
Well, that shot from Jack on the phone, that long shot up the stairs, that is a gorgeous shot.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to point that out because that's a great shot.
Oh, yeah. And now whose perspective was that camera that left the kitchen and went upstairs?
It might not have been anybody's perspective because they're not doing found footage anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, not so much somebody with a camera, but are we looking through someone's eyes? Because it's very reminiscent of the very first chapter where the camera's down at the bottom of the stairs looking at the family picture, then goes upstairs, comes back down, then Jack comes in.
So it
certainly has that. The way it moves, it kind of moves like a person walking through the house.
That is true.
So somebody.
Well, it could be Goth Girl. It could be Catherine.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, certainly feels like Catherine keeping an eye on Jack, but Goth Girl also seems to be hanging around keeping an eye on things, too.
Right.
And so, once we get upstairs, we have Melissa sitting in the chair, the same chair her mother was sitting in, making those videos for her, and kind of freaking out. And eventually, her head kind of tilts down, and she seems to, I don't know, black out. And has a few different visions. One of them is her running through a field. And it's a quick shot, but it certainly appears that she's wearing kind of all black clothes. You notice that?
I did. And I wondered, is it her or is it Goth Girl?
I don't know.
I mean, I assume it's her.
Is she being chased? Is she just trying to get somewhere quickly?
I'm pretty sure that it's her.
Okay. And why the change in clothes is similar to the clothes that she, well, it's all black like she was wearing when she left the warehouse in chapter 9.
Yeah, and when she showed back up at her house in chapter 9.
Yeah.
And then also when she went to bed at the beginning of the episode, she was also wearing all black then.
That's true. And now, when she's in her mother's room, she's kind of wearing that traditional Melissa Strogue, you know, plaid kind of shirt and jeans. So it definitely seems like there's some kind of split in her personality, I feel like.
I was wondering if the fact that she's back to wearing the, like, flannel and jeans that's her normal outfit is her, like, striving for normalcy.
Sure.
Just, like, trying to make everything as normal and not crazy as possible.
Yeah. I could certainly see that. Yeah, because it's more reminiscent of her in the first Haunting Melissa before things really got crazy.
Right.
It makes me wonder about the time frame of this episode sometimes, especially when she kind of passes out and has these visions. It seems like it's not just a vision, like she's moving in time and space around.
It does, because they don't really have... I mean, some of the visions, like when it's all black or she's... seeing the face. Mm-hmm. Who is that face, by the way?
I mean, it looks like a really distorted version of a goth girl, but I mean, I don't even know. It's really messed up.
I thought it was her mom.
Certainly could be that, too. I mean, maybe a family resemblance.
Yeah.
It's so weird looking. I have my phone paused on it right now. Disturbing.
But that's the only one that feels, like, dreamlike. The other ones feel more like things that actually happened.
Right. Well, and when that whole little animatic happens where you see the... Well, first you see the... What eventually will be that weird black and white face on the screen. It's much smaller and far away. I'm going through my screenshots and doing some enhancing on one. And when it's far away and kind of shaking back and forth... All around in the foreground, especially if you lighten the image, is these weird, I don't know, like, tentacle-like fibers all around it. I don't know what that's supposed to be.
Really?
Yeah. It looks very similar to a lot of the strange stuff you see when you first open the app and you get that little animation.
Oh, yeah.
And it almost looks like a, I don't know, electron microscope view of, like, fur or something. It's very strange.
Hmm.
And then eventually we get that full, like, right up in the screen, and it's that pale girl kind of look. I don't know what it is. It's really strange. Don't like looking at it. In the next vision we get, we hear, what do we hear? We see the doorway of the root cellar, and a voice says, "Open the door." So we're kind of going back to where Melissa ended up in the first Haunting Melissa.
Right, so that seems like a memory.
Right.
Or she's just back there.
Yeah, it's either her memory or, I don't know. There's crosses all over the walls, kind of pieced together from bits of wood. There's a very strange... To the left of the door... Well, first off, the door's open already when this is happening. So, is this after whatever was in there got out?
Oh, I don't know.
Because the camera's moving down the stairs, the door's already cracked open, and from our perspective on the left side, the wall right to where the door meets the wall, it looks like it might be blood, but there's a strange three-pronged, like, blood stain on the wall. And it kind of, looking at it, reminds me of back in Chapter 9, after she wakes up and she's going to walk out of the warehouse, on the wall where that DSD is, where Melissa's sometimes there and sometimes she's not, there's a big, big, dark, spray-painted figure on the wall. And it's got a hand kind of pointing towards the door, and it has three protrusions on it, too. Looks very similar to what we see outside the door.
Interesting.
It almost looks like, and this might just be out there, but that's what this whole thing is about. Whatever it was that was in there, when it left, it kind of put its hand on the wall and it left this mark there. Because it's like in the right place where it, you know, it would have opened the door and then kind of reached out and walked out. I don't know. Pure speculation. And so after we come back from that, back into the room, Melissa hears a voice.
Yeah, and it's an impatient sounding voice. Like, perhaps she's been saying this for a while.
Yeah, like while she was passed out, maybe?
Yeah.
Come on. It's the middle of the day. Get up. And there's a girl outside in a white dress, no shoes, calling to her. And then Jack knocks on the door to let Melissa know there's someone there to talk to her. And of course, deliberately doesn't tell her who it is.
Right.
Naturally. And it's who I assume he was on the phone with in the kitchen. Just for the sake of timing, maybe.
I just want to say, I definitely thought it was going to be Brandon. Because yeah. Jack promised him in chapter 9 that if he heard anything, he would call him.
Right, right.
So I figured it was going to be Brandon. And it does not appear as though Jack has kept that bargain.
Yeah, he's got a lot on his mind. Or
that is very true.
Or he's suspicious and he knows stuff.
Yeah, maybe because Brandon is out of the town.
Yeah, he just wants to leave it.
He's not gonna. Yeah.
Plus,
not rock that boat.
He doesn't need one more person asking questions because nobody seems to like anyone asking questions.
Right.
Because then if he calls Brandon, Brandon shows up, and then he talks to Melissa. She starts talking her crazy talk, and Brandon wants to know what's going on, and he's got enough on his plate.
Yeah.
With whatever crazy deals he might have made in the past.
Yeah. So,
Caraway is in the, living room. What are your thoughts about this scene?
So, Mrs. Caraway bothers me.
Why is that? Besides the obvious.
She seems very detached.
Mm-hmm. Not a good trait for a grief counselor.
No, it doesn't. She doesn't seem like she's, like, engaged with her clients, patients, whatever, since I don't know exactly what her qualifications are.
Right.
She doesn't, you know, really seem like she cares one way or the other what happens. She's just kind of throwing things out there and hoping something sticks, maybe?
Sure.
I don't know. She doesn't seem like she cares very much. And that is very off-putting to me.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, it almost seems like it's more important for her to convince her patient of what she thinks the problem is.
Well, on the surface level, she makes a really good point.
Sure.
I mean, Melissa has just been gone for a month, has no idea where she was, says she doesn't remember anything. And, you know, Mrs. Caraway says, well, maybe what you think is making you crazy is really just you trying to remember what's going on, and maybe you should just remember.
And maybe there's something about yourself you don't want to know.
Yeah.
But she says it in such a way, like she already knows the answers.
Right, and she definitely does say, let it out.
Right.
I think at one point, I said definitely, but I think she says it at one point,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, she seems like she's just very, she's trying to guide her to make her own decision about how crazy she is or to let her know about something, but in a really roundabout way.
Yeah.
I don't know about her.
I don't really either. I find her very suspicious.
Yeah, because, I mean, she definitely knows something. And it's almost like her function is to manage anybody that's going crazy. Like,
oh, she's a handler.
Yeah, she's a handler. That's it.
That's her job. She's the crazy people handler.
Yeah. Something's going wrong with Melissa. Jack calls her up. She comes over and does her mumbo jumbo to try to convince her. And if things get too bad, convince her she's crazy and she should be in a facility.
Like Amanda.
Right.
Meanwhile, Melissa looks out the window.
Uh-huh.
And that girl's out there again.
Yeah, so she's coming back. So she's very persistent. And she seems like she, I don't know, I guess cares what's going on with Melissa.
Yeah, she doesn't seem malicious in any way.
Right.
Part of that would be the costuming.
Right. She's not all pale and all black with really long fingers. She's just a girl in a dress.
Yeah.
And she wants her to go to the church.
Oh, yeah. Melissa runs out of the room and back upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Shuts herself back in her mom's room.
Yep.
And the girls... Oh, did you happen to catch what Jack and Mrs. Caraway are saying as they walk to the car?
No, I've tried, and very difficult. I have to try some more.
I have not been able to get that yet. But she's looking out the window, and as Mrs. Caraway is driving away, the girl's standing out there again.
Yep. Up in the distance by the road, and Caraway's car is way down the way.
Right.
Hmm.
And then her voice comes through the radio.
Right.
Which I have to admit is kind of terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. And there was a scene like that in the first Haunting Melissa with voices and the radio turning on.
Yeah.
Related, I don't know, but interesting nonetheless.
And she says, don't trust anyone.
Right. So she knows something.
Right. I'll wait for you at the church. You'll be safe there.
What is that about?
What is that about?
And what time is it on the clock radio?
7 something.
10:41.
Where did I get 7?
I don't know. Maybe yours is different than mine. No.
Yeah, definitely thought it said 7 something.
Well.
But I also am not as detail oriented as you are, so.
Well, my screenshot says 10:41 in the morning. PM light is not on. Assorted things on the nightstand. There's a couple of Bibles, a cross necklace, a Virgin Mary kind of sculpture thing. A mirror. It's a small wooden box with a cross on it. Another Bible. There's lots of classic Catherine Strogue stuff on there.
Yes, many, many religious.
And like a jar of cold cream or something there. I don't know what that is.
Hey, proper skincare is important even if you're going crazy.
Yeah, somebody should tell the visitor that his skin's looking a little rough.
Well, I think he's injured in some way.
How? Ooh, what?
I don't know.
What injures a guy who can appear through a portal in a trailer park?
Well, I don't know. He could still be just a guy.
I suppose. Well,
we don't really know that much about him.
I want to know everything. I don't know.
He might just be like a facilitator for whatever this deal and stuff is. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if he's a facilitator and Caraway's a handler, or maybe she's on that team. I mean, she certainly seems to know more or at least different information than Jack does.
Yeah.
I mean, Jack knows what he did, but I don't think it goes beyond that. Caraway
no,
seems
I don't
think
to
have some inside information.
She does. She seems to have an agenda.
Yeah. And don't know about her. Where are we? So she's going to head off to the church.
Yes, she walks there.
Yes.
And it's beautiful.
Of course. Everything outside on this in this movie looks amazing.
It does. And the music in this on her little walk is really very sentimental sounding, which is not generally the tone the music takes in this.
Right.
So that was interesting.
I agree. And she swings by the cemetery.
Say hi to Mom real quick.
Yeah, might as well. Since you're out there.
I mean, it would be me not to.
Sure. It's on the way. And we got, and we can see that she is definitely wearing the old Melissa Stroge outfit, the Stroge outfit, the blue jeans and the boots and the plaid shirt. So she's kind of back to who she was. And she goes into the church and slowly opens the door. And there's a funeral going on.
There is a funeral going on. And there are some familiar people in the congregation.
Oh, yeah. We got to judge by backs of heads for the most part. But, well, up front, running the whole thing, we have the Reverend.
Who we recognize.
From that very, very bizarre, was that chapter 3?
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Standing over the grave with Holly and finding the whole thing very hilarious and... I'd love to know why.
Yeah, that is, that's a weird, that one bugs me.
Yeah, because it's short and it's, but there's so much there, but what do you do with that?
It's like a piece of the puzzle and we don't have any other adjoining pieces.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know anything about the Reverend. We know that he officiated this funeral, it looks like, and that he was involved with Holly and the funeral that she was at, and that he has a dark sense of humor.
Yes.
And didn't seem freaked out by it, as if he knows what's going on, too.
True. Well, one of the recurring themes is that everyone in the town knows what's going on.
Yeah, and I wonder, what is it that everyone knows? Is this... like the small town, something happens to a young girl in the town, everybody knows about it, nobody wants to talk about it? Or do they know the full extent of this crazy stuff that's going on?
Yeah, that is a good question. I mean, maybe they just know something happened, but they don't know.
Because him laughing about the coffin trying to burst open seems like he knows a lot.
I definitely don't feel like that would be my reaction.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he's just one of the townspeople covering up the death or disappearance of Catherine's sister.
Yeah.
He seems like this is, like, he's all in for this, and I don't know why. Who else do we have in the church?
Well, there's a gentleman in a hat.
The iconic hat.
The iconic hat and another DSE.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Sometimes he's in the front and sometimes he's in the back.
Yes. So occasionally he'll appear behind Melissa, standing in the last pew. And that makes me wonder about time as well.
Yeah, I definitely think that that particular DSC lends credence to your time thing.
Right. Because, I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility to imagine him being in two places at once. He can appear in a trailer park at a whim. But it almost seems like he's watching her watch this.
Yeah.
And he's also watching. Like, so it's two separate hymns. Maybe it's...
But he's not threatening her in any way. He's not... It's just, he's just observing her observe the scene.
Right.
Which is also interesting to me.
And I just had an interesting thought. Because you were saying that maybe, you know, he's injured because he's just a regular person. Maybe the one in the front was him when he was just a regular person.
Ooh.
Because he doesn't do anything particularly supernatural up there. He has a limp. Anybody could have a limp. And he's sitting next to... somebody we know.
Yes, my favorite, Mrs. Carraway.
Yeah, so she's front row and center for the funeral. Do you notice anybody else?
Well,
maybe notice anyone else.
I saw a couple of people that could have been people that we know.
Right.
But I wasn't sure.
Hmm.
Yeah. And there's actually a really good comment on the discussion board where somebody broke it down who's sitting there.
Yeah, I was just looking at that a minute ago, and it's definitely interesting.
And I thought maybe, because there's a girl. No, but that doesn't make any sense.
Were you thinking Holly?
I thought Emma was there.
Emma. Oh, yes, the girl who stands up and has the hair kind of hanging in right. front of her face. Because you never quite see her face. But
I don't think it's her because of reasons that we don't know yet.
Right, yeah.
So I don't want to say anything else.
Yes, if you're listening, we're being crafty and not pulling in information that we know.
I'm trying really hard not to.
Which is very hard.
It is.
In the back row of the pews on Melissa's left, I was reading in the comments that someone thinks that, let me see, where's my photo? That might be Farley Mason.
Yeah.
And kind of looking at the shape of his hair and the shape of his head, it certainly seems like it could be. But I don't know. And then, go ahead.
Oh, and then we've got, you know, the girl in the coffin.
Yeah. And who that might be. But how do we, you know, I don't know. How do you... Because when I first saw this chapter and then did some looking around on IMDb, it certainly appears like it's the same girl who plays Jane Lancaster.
So, if that is the case... Then how did Jane Lancaster die?
Right. It lends credence to the idea that Farley is sitting in the church.
Yes, it definitely does. Your creepy stalker.
Quite far back, but, you know.
Totally, which... Well, he's a creepy stalker.
I'm surprised he's not filming this.
Yeah, right. Maybe he is. He's got his phone.
There's a tripod set up in the corner. And on the right side...
Farley.
It looks like... And someone on the... I think the same discussion board, someone... thinks that that might be Mike Cole on the far right.
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
Now, it's possible that they were just filming this and they just had everybody sit in the pews as stand-ins.
Yeah, but...
Just to, you know, but that doesn't feel like something that they would do.
No, and as hard as we all look at this, I mean, we would recognize people pretty quickly if they were just sitting in there.
Right.
And they'd have at least had one other person with a fedora on, just to throw us off.
Right. Well, the Mrs. Carraway and Fedora sitting up front seems very deliberate. I mean, yeah, we see their faces. And, you know, this person on the message board says that, and I noticed this when I rewatched it, the hat man in the front looks a little bit younger and not quite as injured.
Right.
And the one in the back looks
haggard more, yeah.
Right.
And there is a placard up front next to the Reverend, and I managed to get a fairly decent close-up shot of it, and it does look like it actually says Jane on it.
Oh.
And it's kind of overlaid on a picture of, like, the forest. And so it's a shot where actually right after the girl that we think might be Emma, but probably isn't Emma, when she gets up, that's about as close as the camera gets to it. And it looks like it might say Jane. So it's certainly possible.
Yeah.
And so the girl in the coffin, well, just clicked onto this screenshot I have. It's like she's wearing black lipstick.
Right. Right, I noticed that too. And it's the same girl that's been appearing to her. That's
right.
Obvious. And I find the difference between what she looks like in her coffin and what she looked like appearing to
Melissa.
Melissa is that's really interesting to me.
Yeah. And after the camera shows her in the coffin and then cuts back to Melissa, and you can see the back rows of the pews where sometimes you see the visitor and sometimes you don't.
Yeah.
There is a clock in the top right corner, and it looks like the time says... it's hard to read. I'm going to say... Wow, that looks really strange. 1, 2, 3, 9, 10. Looks like it may say... It's not as clear as I'd like it to be, but perhaps 10 56 or so. It looks like the continuity department did a good job on that one. Because it might have taken her that long to walk there. And so now I'm looking at where Caraway and Fedora are walking away. Yeah, he seems a little different. And can't quite tell who anybody else is in the shot. A few young people there, but it gives you an idea of maybe, you know, her peers, maybe from school, something like that.
Right.
Can't tell if anybody is the parents of Jane or the girl in the coffin.
Yeah, that's weird. There doesn't seem to be any family there.
Right.
Which is... odd.
Sparsely attended.
Yeah, and I mean, I just kind of wonder why her family's not there.
Right.
Which makes me think maybe this is not... maybe this is a dream, and it's not really... she's not really there.
Right. It's kind of a class, a bringing together of different things into one familiar place.
Right.
Hmm. So... Melissa approaches the coffin after it closes, after the reverend closes it, and she opens it, and no one's in there. Then comes one of my most favorite shots from this whole movie.
Oh, it's great.
Like, super, super brilliant. Whoever came up with that, I need to ask Neil about that, whose genius idea this was, that, Melissa suddenly, when she backs up, finds that she's holding hands with somebody.
But you can't see who it is.
Right. And then that person turns around, and it's the girl from the coffin with a rather horrible-looking laceration around her neck.
Right.
Or ligature marks around her neck.
And she didn't turn around. I mean, she just kind of revolves in place.
Right. And if you look on the Tumblr at itwantstogetout.tumblr.com, I posted a picture that Neil posted on Instagram. Actually, you know what? I'm going to look up exactly when that was. Instagram. Oh. Because if you're not looking at his Instagram and his Tumblr and the Haunting Melissa Instagram and Tumblr, you really should. There's lots of really interesting information. June 2014, he posted a picture of what he called and what is labeled as Active Susan.
Which is genius.
It's like a wooden rectangle with a wooden circle on top of it that has a really cool Haunting Melissa 2 kind of icon on it. And... became very obvious to me that that's what they used to rotate her in place so dramatically. Brilliant. And so she's holding her hand. Go ahead.
It is super dramatic. I mean, this is by far the scariest episode, I think.
Ah, yeah. I'd agree with that.
Or the one with the most startle moments.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, and then Melissa wakes up, and she's back at home, back in the chair, back in the locked room.
With her hand still extended, like she's holding someone's hand.
Right, and when she opens it, a key falls out. Perfect ending.
Perfect ending.
So then it makes you question... is this a dream and she was able to bring something back, or did she actually travel somewhere, actually get this key and actually drop it on the floor? Like, did these things really happen?
Right. And it's is it time hopping? Is she dreaming? Are they visions? I mean, it's so many questions after this one.
Right. I mean, let's say it was a vision. That means she was sitting there in the chair with her head down. And somehow someone put something in her hand.
Right.
Weird.
Which is weird.
If it wasn't a vision and she went into a little bit of a trance and actually walked and did all those things, also weird. If she was just teleported to these different places, also weird.
There's especially since how did she get back?
Right. Of course, she has lost time before. And she's trying to remember where she was, and she can't remember that, so anything could have happened here.
So I definitely wondered if she was remembering things that happened while she was gone.
Sure.
But it seems unlikely. And it also seems unlikely that, if that is Jane Lancaster, that her funeral was held at the church just a few minutes down the road from Melissa's house.
Yeah. I don't know about that. It's a lot happening in one place.
Yeah.
Hmm. And I wonder where... do we know where that is at this point?
Where the church is?
Well, we know the church. We know the church is. Do we know where, like, Farley Mason's house is and the Lancasters and, I mean, even Emma's trailer park? I have no idea where that is in relation to this. It seems like such a local thing, but
it does seem like such a local thing. But
and that's a whole different kind of neighborhood.
Yeah,
and everything seems different about it.
Yeah. So I don't. I mean, we don't know where that is yet.
Yeah.
In relation to where Melissa is. So.
But, like, there's never any talk about this girl or anything. Like, she was never involved in any of the Holly discussions and the online chatting from Aunt Melissa 1.
Right.
Am I at... Oh, and one of the visions, we left out one of the visions, because I didn't have it in order in my pictures. Because she sees herself running through the field.
Right. The one where dude is walking through the hallway?
Yeah, the visitor is going through a hallway of some kind of a place, like an exit door. And, yeah, it just takes a few of his limpy steps down the hall. And the camera's on a really weird Dutch angle. Looks like it's on the floor. And he just takes a few steps, and that's all we get.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's hinting at.
Definitely looks like a hospital of some kind.
Yeah. There's some railings on the wall, like you'd see at a hospital. It almost, I don't know what that is. It almost looks like a coffee cup. But, yeah. Why is he going there? I don't know. Why are goth girls' fingers so long?
And creepy.
I don't know.
They're so creepy.
It's very, very suspicious. Hmm. Any additional thoughts about this chapter?
I don't know. It's the first one we get after Melissa's back.
Right.
And we're, not even halfway through yet?
Right, yeah. 25 chapters. 3 hours a movie.
But this is the one where I really started paying attention to what Melissa was wearing.
Yeah, because, she had a pretty consistent style. And then now that she's back, when she comes back in chapter 9, she's got the leather jacket on.
Like she did at in the very last episode.
Of the first one, yeah.
Of the first one. And it's, I don't know, it seems like a really deliberate choice.
Yeah, I mean, leather jacket, it's kind of a classic symbol of, you know, maybe somebody being a bit darker.
Right.
And so something is different about her since she left and came back.
Well, and judging by the costuming, mm-hmm. Jack's not really doing that great either, the other thing. I mean, he's got the, like, beard coming in, and he's all untucked and disheveled. And...
yeah, he's a bit haggard, so clearly it's having an effect on him.
And Melissa's got these bags under her eyes. Great job by the makeup and costume department.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about her hair. You were telling me about that a while back, especially when she was talking to Caraway and having that kind of, like, this hasn't been washed in a few days look.
Yeah, it definitely, I mean, it looks like she's trying really hard to be normal, but she can't quite get there.
Right.
And it's just, it's the little touches, because ever since she came back, I kept going, she doesn't look right. She looks there's something different about the way that she looks. Like, even her hair is, like, a little bit fuller, too.
Sure.
Which is weird.
And I speculated back in Chapter 9 with Ahmed that, because we see Melissa wake up and walk out of the warehouse past herself, basically,
mm-hmm.
that maybe there are two of her, maybe not literally two separate Melissas, but there's a difference. And that one Melissa maybe is still trapped in there or is kind of left behind. Like, there's a division that's happening, kind of like the beginning of Fight Club, where you see those little blinks of Brad Pitt. And then over time, as the personality starts to split and split, eventually one kind of takes over. It's more there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an interesting point. And it's hard to filter now that I've watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to remember exactly what I thought was going on when I watched this the first time.
Sure. Well, go ahead and plug your Twitter again. Let everyone know where they can contact you.
I'm at SlowGinLiz on Twitter.
All right. Yes, and I'm Zero. I'm at A Public Witness on Twitter. I also write the Haunting Melissa Darkhearts blog at itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. And if you're listening to this through iTunes, if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. Also visit adarkcompanion.com. That'll link directly to the Podomatic page, where you can read the show descriptions. It's a easy way to tweet it, much shorter URL. There's also a subscribe link there that will take you back to iTunes, or at very least the RSS feed. And there's also a PayPal donation button there if you choose to use it. Entirely up to you. Well, Liz, I want to thank you for being my guest on episode 7.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was fun.
No problem. Can we have you back again sometime soon?
Sure.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
All right. You have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.